Hey, it's May 3rd, 2015 in Baltimore, Maryland. And we're going to be exploring the story of Nisenga Day. Everybody ready?
Yeah!
Hey, what enthusiasm. So this story is very much... You have good focus there?
Yeah.
Okay. This story is very much about friends and enemies. In fact, this whole section of the Bhagavatam, what time do I have to end?
You can keep going, there's nothing
else. What time do you end?
Usually around 6:15.
Okay.
So we can go 6:30, it's fine.
6:30 is okay? Yes, okay, I think it'll take till 6:30. That's all right with everybody?
Yeah.
All right to squish?
Yes.
Maybe you want that fan on?
No.
It doesn't work. I see. Okay. So, there's part of the Bhagavatam. May you raise all your funds quickly. Deals with friends and enemies. The way that this whole section starts is the question, does God have friends or enemies? Why does it appear that God is favoring the devotees and punishing the demons? So we can think about how much time and energy do we put into maintaining our friendships and dealing with our enemies. Trying to protect ourselves. I'm trying to make a nice situation for ourselves. We're worrying about what do people think of us? Do my friends still like me? What am I going to do with this enemy? And how much of our energy do we put into that? So we define friends and enemies by someone who helps me with what I want to do or someone who hurts me with what I want to do. But here's the nice teaching of Prahlad Maharaj that he says, don't discriminate like this between friends and enemies. Now, of course, on a practical level, you don't bring tigers into your home. Yeah? But we don't hate the tiger. So we don't bring a tiger into our... Now, some people make a tiger into a pet, huh? Mm-hmm. Right? But that's not recommended. If you can excuse me just 1 minute. I'm falling off this chair. Just 1 second. If you can hold this one. So some people bring a tiger into their home and think, you know, the tiger is my pet, but then sometimes their pet tiger eats them, right? So you don't want to make a tiger your pet, but nor do you hate a tiger. So the idea is that the devotee is loving and caring and the well-wisher of all living entities. Prahlad says that the only enemy is really our mind, because it's our mind that discriminates and says, here's somebody who's going to help me and I should be nice to them, and here's someone who's going to hurt me and I should be cruel to them. Do you know, I've often found in my life that sometimes my enemies, so-called enemies, were the people who did me the biggest favor. You ever had that? Sometimes I learned the most from the people who were antagonistic to me, more so than from my so-called friends. You know, I've had people who, you know, they set out to hurt me, but instead I learned wonderful lessons from them. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
No, never. Well, it might sometimes. So we might ask also if God is partial. Right? It appears that he sides with, he says, Parichranayasadhanam Vinashayachajuskrinam. Sounds like he's partial. But in this story we learn that he was also the best friend of Hiranyakashipu. Can you see from over there? There's no way.
Yeah, yeah,
you can't. You have to kind of, yeah. After the clash of Buddha, stuck like this. So what's explained in the Bhagavatam is that what appears to be the partiality of the Lord is simply that the world favors sattva gun. What does that mean? Sattva not only means good, it also means true, yes? What else does sat mean? Sattva.
Eternal.
And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever is true is eternally true. Like this is not eternally a microphone, correct? It was something else before. So it's metal and plastic. Right? It was in the earth before, and it won't stay a microphone. So it's not eternally a microphone. That's not an eternal truth. Therefore, we cannot say this is a microphone. We can say material elements have temporarily formed into a microphone. So sat is something that's true and something that's good. And the world favors what's true. The world favors what's true. So this is just like saying that if you walk out of this door, you'll be happy. And if you try to walk out of the wall, will you be happy?
No.
No. Now, does that mean the person who built this building was mean? Was he mean? The builder?
No.
Or the planner, the architect, was he mean? No.
No.
No. He didn't say, well, I'm going to make these walls just to punish people. So in the same way, Krishna is also, he's neutral, and he simply, if you use things the way they're meant to be used, which is in Krishna's loving service, you'll be happy, and if you don't, you won't. So, now we're going to have the story of the father who saw that everyone was his enemy, and the son who didn't think about friends or enemies at all. So the Lord, this is the fourth incarnation of the Lord, and he came to relieve the demigods of their despair. Now this story really starts with another incarnation of the Lord, Varaha, that Hiranyaka and his friends, they were digging for oil in the earth, and they had dug too deep, it's explained in the second canto. And this reminds us of what's going on today, people digging for oil and fracking and so many things. And they had upset the balance of the earth and knocked the earth out of its orbit and knocked it down into the universe. And then the Lord came right as that great boar, Varaha, and he rescued the earth from the bottom of the ocean. Now, this Hiranyaksha had a brother, Hiranyakashipu, and this brother, Hiranyakashipu, considered that because Lord Vishnu killed my brother, Lord Vishnu must be my enemy. Now, he didn't think, well, my brother was a criminal. He didn't think like that. So this is very common. We find this in Krishna's pastimes. When Krishna killed Kamsa, Kamsa's father-in-law. Who was Kamsa's father-in-law? What's his name? Jarasandhar. He said, oh, Krishna's killed my son-in-law, therefore he's my enemy and I should kill him. And he didn't think that Kamsa killed so many of his nephews. You know, that wasn't a consideration for him. So this is also generally how we think as materialistic people. We think when I do something wrong or my friends do something wrong, that's excusable. But if someone does something to me, that's inexcusable. So that's how Hiranyakashipu was thinking. And he pacified his relatives, and then out of anger at Lord Vishnu, he told all of his associates to cause total destruction on the earth. Now, I think we just had something like this here in Baltimore. Yes? And somebody was so angry that one person was unjustly killed, that one person was murdered by the police, that they destroyed their own city. Rather childish, isn't it? You know? So you should, it's okay to be upset that a crime's done, especially a crime's done by the government, but then you don't destroy your own city. You don't destroy your own stores, you don't destroy your own neighborhoods. So this is what Hiranyakashipu and his friends did. So they tried to destroy everything. You know, you can come in. One advantage about being a kid is you can squeeze in places that nobody else can squeeze. You might as well do it now. You won't be able to do it your whole life. So right, go. There's all kinds of squeezable places there. There's space for kids. So you can do that too. I mean, unless you're happy looking at my screen. But if you guys want to come in, there's all kinds of kid-sized spaces over there. There are, you know, just nobody will mind. Yes, I gather you all like children here. Very nice.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you like children, your community will prosper. Very, you have a wonderful sign. Do you want to move into? You want to go squeeze there? Are you guys brothers?
Yes.
Are you twins?
Yes.
Okay, so Hiranyakashipu and his friends, they were cutting down trees, fruit trees. They were destroying the agricultural fields. They were killing, they were murdering people. They were just basically trying to destroy the whole earth planet. And then Hiranyakashipu thought, well, that's not enough. Because Lord Vishnu killed my brother. I don't want him to kill me. So he thought, well, I better become super powerful. If I become super powerful, then Lord Vishnu's not going to kill me. So he decided he was going to do austerities to get power. So when people don't understand this quite today, but even today, if you want to be powerful, you have to take some trouble, right? You have to work hard in school, or have to work long hours at a job. And everything we do is done by austerity in this material world. The spiritual world, there's desire trees, and you just say, you know, I want an apple pie, and there it is. But in this world, one has to work hard. So I ran to Gaji, who did austerities, and you know what he did? He stood on his tiptoes with his arms way up in the air for a long time. And what was really amazing, we know that there are yogis who can control their breathing and their heartbeat, but Hiranyakashipu did what no one had ever been able to do before, according to Lord Brahma, and that is his whole body was eaten by ants. It was only bones. It was just a skeleton. And he kept, his soul stayed next to the bones. Amazing, huh? And he was starting to cause a disturbance in the universe. You see the fire coming out of his head? So it's starting to cause an imbalance in the universe. And therefore, Lord Brahma came. Now, Lord Brahma's really funny here. He says to him, you who have to die can get a benediction from me. So he knew that Hiranyakashipu wanted to say, I don't ever want to die. So he starts out by saying, you who will have to die, O mortal one, I will give you a benediction. Now, Hiranyakashipu doesn't quite figure this out. Have you ever been asked a question and you say, I don't know, and then the person keeps asking you in another way, trying to get you to answer when you just don't know? Has that ever happened to you? So something like that. Lord Brahma said, I can't make you immortal. And Hiranyakashipu thinks he's going to trick him. So he asks Lord Brahma, he says, please give me these benedictions. I want to be the ruler of everyone. I want to be in charge of everything. So usually we want to be in charge of a few things. We want to be in charge of our house, or you want to be in charge of your toys, or something like that. But he wanted to be in charge of everything in the whole universe. And he asked that he have no rivals. He said, I want to be in charge of everything with no competition, nobody who can oppose me. And I want all glories. I want everybody to be able to say, all glories to you. Now, really, we all want this, although we're not usually quite so gross about it, isn't it? Like, I wish everybody would just do whatever I said all the time. We get so annoyed when people won't do what we say. We want to control everything. And then he wanted all mystic powers. So people want mystic powers. Then you can become smaller than the smallest, and heavier than the heaviest, and lighter than the lightest. You can go anywhere you want. Right now we try to do this with airplanes. And Prapti City, you can get whatever you want. And now we do this. You go on your computer, you find something, you click one button, and 3 hours later, it's at your house. Right? That's our... Now Prabhupada said all these mystic powers, they're imitated by modern science. So this is what he wanted. But he wanted them really, you could just say, you know, I want a coconut. And then there's a coconut. When Prabhupada was a little boy, a yogi came to his house who could do that. And Prabhupada saw him reach out his hand and just pull a mango out of the air, even though it wasn't mango season. Where did he get it from? I don't know. Another part of the planet. And then Hiranyakashipu said, well, all right, if you can't make me immortal, these are all the ways I don't want to die. Living, not living. Inside, outside. Day, night. Ground, sky. Human, animal. Demigod, demon. Or any weapon. He said, I don't want to die in any of those ways. Did he leave out anything? Even disease is caused by some animal, right? So, did he get everything? What do you guys think? I think he got everything, didn't he? No, he didn't? Who said that? Right? You're looking out the window? Oh my goodness, such determination. You know, we have kid-sized space in here, just waiting for you. You don't have to be looking in the window. We've saved some space just for you in here. Really, seriously, come on. So, what, did he forget anything?
Yeah.
What did he forget?
If anybody like, he had the face of you. Human and the body of...
Oh, who would think of that? You know, you're not going to think, well, something that's half this and half that. And so, but otherwise, I think he had everything. There you go. Or is there a space for this young man over there somewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
Right there, look at that. Right for you. Careful for the wires. Oops. There you go. See, we saved it just for you. Now, once he got all these powers, he decided he was going to cause trouble with them. And that's exactly what he did. So he went to the heavenly planets, to Indra's planet. He took Indra's throne. And he was controlling the whole universe himself. So he didn't need any of the demigods. He was so powerful. He was controlling the rain, the sunshine, the wind, everything for all the planets in the universe. Now, he was also controlling everything in ways that we might even think were really good. For example, he was making the trees and the plants bear fruit and vegetables all year. So we do that today, don't we? And you can go, I'm sure, in Baltimore any time of the year and buy strawberries, right? Even though they're out of season. So this is what Hiranyakashipu did. Now, this is not actually a good idea. Forcing is not a good idea. Forcing is the opposite of love. Whenever we're trying to force ourselves or somebody else or nature, we're really not doing the right thing. And this is a very demoniac mentality. Let me force. But he thought, I am giving everybody prosperity. Then he also made all the demigods worship him. He said, don't worship Lord Vishnu anymore, worship me. Now there were only three deities that did not worship Hiranyakashipu. Who were they?
Vishnu, Shiva, and
Brahma. No, even Narada did. Only Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma did not worship Hiranyakashipu. Of course, Narada only superficially worshipped him. Sometimes this happens, that even devotees have to be respectful to a demoniac person. Yes? Does this happen? Oh, my dear sir, what can I do for you? Now, we would think that Hiranyakashipu at this point would be very happy because he got everything that anybody could want. If you go to school today in the modern school system and watch TV and read books and go to the movies, what will you be told is the way to become happy? Get a big house and fancy car and a beautiful husband or wife and intelligent children and go to the best schools. Have a prestigious job, have everyone respect you, and a big flat screen TV. And then you're going to be happy, right?
No.
Isn't that what they do? No?
Chanting Hare Krishna makes you happy.
Oh, no. You mean all this time I was working for a house and a car and the flat screen TV and I was wasting my time? Oh, no. Oh, I do. So, we see, though, that the people who have the big, beautiful houses and the nice cars and the dogs and the flat-screen TV, are all of them happy? No. I mean, if that was the path to happiness, then wouldn't, you know, we'll be charitable. 90%, wouldn't 90% of those people be happy? If that, but are they? You know, every day in the newspaper, some rich, famous, beautiful person is taking drugs or alcohol or tries to commit suicide, right? So this we also see with Hiranyakashipu. And he got more than anybody on this planet. He got more than the Bill Gates or, you know, the movie stars. But you know what? Look at what he was doing. He was yelling at the demigods and punishing them for no reason. Now, if someone's yelling and punishing for no reason, that person must be very what? Angry, what else? Unhappy, what else?
Unsatisfied,
what else?
Arrogant.
Have you met people like this? Hopefully it wasn't yourself. But if you met people like this, who just were angry, no reason, nothing, but no reason at all, and they're just angry, and they're yelling at everybody, right? So that was what Hiranyakashipu did. He had everything. And this was a way we could tell he wasn't happy. Another way we could tell he wasn't happy is that he was always drinking alcohol. So this, the people who are drinking alcohol, you know, they're not happy. Happy people don't need to drink alcohol. They're already happy. So just see, he got everything. I mean, you take the biggest dreams of the materialists on this planet and you multiply them by about 1,000, and that's what Hiranyakashipu got, and all he did was he was yelling at everybody all the time and getting intoxicated. So he obviously wasn't a very happy person. All right, well, while Hiranyakashipu was performing his austerities, the demigods took advantage and took over his kingdom. And his wife was pregnant, Kayadu was pregnant, and the demigods were going to take her and kill her child. And Narada said, this is a special child. He's a devotee. So he took Kayadu to his ashram to teach her about bhakti. But there was a problem with Kayadu. What was she thinking about the whole time that Narada Muni was instructing her? What was she thinking about?
About her baby.
She was thinking about her baby, yeah. And what else was she, who else was she thinking about? Her husband, because he was gone. And he was doing all these austerities, and she wanted to make sure he was going to be okay, and he was going to come back. So she was just worrying about her husband and her baby, and she wasn't really listening. So maybe some of you now are doing that too. Maybe some of you now, you're sitting here, and you look like you're listening, but you're not really. And afterwards we say, oh, what was the class about? Miss Singh a day. Right? So internally, if you have some anxiety, if you're thinking, oh, okay, I got to go to work tomorrow, my boss is already angry, and I don't have the paper done yet, and, you know, and my daughter and her husband just got in a big fight, or my husband and I just got in a big fight, or we don't have enough money, or, you know, I had the test done on Friday, the doctor's going to call me on Monday. Yeah, if you're worried about something, then you're probably sitting here worrying about that something and not listening to anything I say. Even when I talk about the fact that you're worrying about something, you're probably still not listening to what I say. So this is what happened to Kayadu. So we call this in one ear and out the other. So although, and this tells us that it's not just externally. You know, sometimes we think, well, if I could only give up my job and my family and go to Vrindavan and just sit at Radhakund and chant Hare Krishna, I'd become a pure devotee in a week. But she's with Narada Muni. Could you get much better than that? She's right with Narada Muni, and he's talking to her about bhakti, and it's in his ashram. It's all very sattvic and wonderful, and she's really not getting much direct benefit. Of course, she gets benefit by being Prahlad's mother. She really didn't take up bhakti. But Prahlad was listening, even though he was the baby in the womb, and we can say, well, is that real? Is that real? I read, probably about 10, 15 years ago, I read about a family, when the wife was pregnant, they were reading out loud PhD-level mathematics books. And all of those kids could talk by the age they were one, and by the time they were 1.5, they could calculate complex mathematical problems. And I know one devotee girl, she was my student in Gurukula, and she told me that she could remember her father reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam to her mother when she was in the womb, when she was in her mother's womb. And every day her father spent several hours reading the Shastra to his wife. And I remember when she was 6 years old in Bhagavatam class, the speaker would say something and she'd raise her hand and she'd say, excuse me, Maharaj, you said such and such, but Prabhupada in his purport in the 4th canto, chapter 2, text 8, he says such and such. And we hadn't taught her that, you know. That was something she learned in the womb. So Prahlad was listening in the room. And after Hiranyakashipu came back, Prahlad was born. So there's a wonderful description of Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam. And we could spend a week or a month just talking about the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. It gives us a template or a guide as to what does it mean really to be a devotee. So unfortunately we don't have the time to discuss this in depth. But he had no pride. Now here's the son of Hiranyakashipu, but he had no pride. And when there's danger, he wasn't disturbed. He knew, I'm not this body, right? And he considered everything material to be useless. He didn't have any material desires. By the way, material desires doesn't just mean I want a house and a car. Material desires means I want to enjoy something separately from Krishna. So he considered that to be useless. And he was fully able to control his senses and his mind. He was kind to everyone. And he acted properly with different people according to their position. And also Prahlad often displayed symptoms of ecstasy. So he would see Krishna. And when he'd see Krishna coming, he'd laugh. And when he'd see Krishna going away, he would cry. And somehow or other, his father had, you know, this great saint as a child. And he didn't recognize that he was a saint. And he sent him off to school to learn how to be a materialist. I think some of you were, some of you met my grandson Vikram that I'm traveling with. He came to the groundbreaking ceremony. So he's with the book on his head. That's And that's his mother. This is an old drama. So after Prahlad went to school for a while, then his father was talking to him and saying, "So, tell me something about school. Tell me something about what's the best thing you learned." So Prahlad was thinking, well, what I learned anywhere from anyone, he wasn't just thinking about his school. He thought about Narada. And he said, the best thing I've learned is that you should give up your attachment to trying to enjoy the world, and you should just serve Lord Vishnu. Serve Lord Vishnu, that's my enemy. You're telling me to serve... I remember when I told my parents I was going to join the Hare Krishna movement, my mother said, you're deserting your own people. She said, it's as if you want Russian citizenship. So that's how Kashyapu thought about this. He thought, he didn't see Prahlad's becoming unlimitedly happy in Krishna consciousness. He's thinking, now Prahlad's my enemy. But he thought, well, it can't really have come from the boy. So he thought, there must be some devotees coming in disguise. And he told the teachers, make sure no devotees come in disguise. So they took Prahlad back to the school, and then they were teaching him about friends and enemies. And they said, this is how to rule a kingdom, and you have to think, these are my friends, these are my enemies, this is how you punish your enemies, this is how you make diplomacy, this is how you try to manipulate and control all the other people in your life. And Prahlad Maharaj says this wonderful thing. He says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose external energy has created the distinctions of my friend and my enemy by deluding the intelligence of men. Indeed, I am now actually experiencing this, although I have previously heard of it from authoritative sources. So sometimes this happens to us, right? We hear something about the philosophy, and then we go in the world and we see that it's true. We get practical experience. So Prahlad had heard about this from Narada. Prahlad, there are people who think like this. And now he saw it was true. Wow, there are really people who think like this. And the teacher said to him, where did you get your knowledge? And he just said, you're not going to understand where I got my knowledge. And I love this statement of Prahlad Maharaj. If we see the world in terms of friends and enemies, we will never see God. We'll never see God. Because God is the supreme truth, param satvam dhimahi. And the truth is, there's no such thing as friends and enemies. So people who are apparently acting as friends and enemies, they're just simply delivering our own destiny. Just like you order something and the UPS delivers it. But the UPS person is neither your friend nor your enemy. They're simply delivering what we ordered. So whatever comes to me through others is simply my own destiny. It's simply by my own actions or the will of the Lord. And everyone is meant to teach me something for my benefit. So the teachers are going on and on and on and on and on about this diplomacy and friends and enemies. And Prahlad Maharaj really doesn't like it. You can see he's not very happy with all this kind of instruction. And then again his father calls him and says, my dear boy, please tell me, what's the best thing you've learned from your teacher? And Prabhupada says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevam Dasaram Pujanasaki Jana Atmanivyam. He says, my dear father, the best thing that I have learned from any of my teachers is that you should always hear about Vishnu, talk about Vishnu, remember Vishnu, and serve Vishnu. Well, this really didn't go over very well at all. His father got extremely angry. Now, what's interesting here is that his father had been very affectionate. When you read in the Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu had been so affectionate to his son. And then, instantly, he became so angry that he tried to kill him. So this is why we say that materialistic people don't have good qualities. They have good qualities, certainly they have good qualities, but when they feel threatened, the good qualities just go away. And Kamsa did this also, right? With Devaki, he's really nice, and he's driving her chariot. Oh, here's my sister. I love her so much. And then he's ready to kill her. So the father pushes his son off the lap, and he said, just like if your arm is rotting, you have to cut it off. So even though he's my son, he has to be killed. And he had Prahlad tortured by demons. They were trying to stab him and cut him up and pierce him. They tried to throw him off a cliff. We put him with a mad elephant. Male elephants have a time of madness called must, where they can't be controlled. So put him with this mad elephant. Put him with poisonous snakes. Threw great rocks on top of him. Put him in the fire. Put him in the freezing cold. The wind gave him poison. And Prahlad couldn't be harmed. So the father got pretty upset. All right, think about this for a minute. So Hiranyakashipu had done all this tapasya, all this austerity. There's some space all the way back there. To try to live forever. And here's his little son, 5 years old, and nothing can kill the boy. Must be pretty frustrating, huh? And Hiranyakashipu became bewildered. He really just didn't know what to do. And then how ridiculous is this? The teachers just say, oh, don't worry. We'll take him back to school and fix him. Isn't that silly? They said, don't worry, he's just a boy. All right, now something very interesting happened here. So previously, Prahlad was just keeping his transcendental knowledge to himself. You know, he said a few things to his teachers and his father when they asked. But basically, he wasn't sharing his knowledge with anyone.
Mary, make sure.
All right. But here his father has tried to kill him and been unsuccessful. So Prahlad became what we would say very emboldened. Does this make sense to everybody? You know, if someone tried to kill you for preaching and they couldn't poison you and they threw you off a cliff and nothing happened, would you become super courageous? Yes? No, you wouldn't? If somebody kept trying to kill you and nothing happened to you, wouldn't you become fearless? I would.
I would just still be chanting.
Well, but see, something changed here, you see. Something changed here. What changed here? Can you see on the screen what changed? Prahlad is now not just chanting and remembering, but he's also starting to do what? He's starting to preach. So we see he starts to preach after his father tries to kill him and is unsuccessful. So Prahlad becomes so fearless now that he's telling all the other children about Krishna, which he wasn't doing before. So now he sees. Okay, so sometimes, you know, the difficulties that we have in life, we may think, why is Krishna allowing this difficulty to happen? But these difficulties really, it put Prahlad into a different frame. It put him into a different mood. And he started preaching to the children. And they said, well, where did you learn all this stuff? Because we all have the same teachers, and they didn't teach it to us. And then Prahlad told the story of how he had heard from Narada when he was in his mother's womb. And of course, there's wonderful teachings of Prahlad. We don't have time to go through all of them. But he talked about how we're different from this body. That as the body changes, just like some of you are in little children's bodies, but you're not going to stay in that kind of a body, right? You're going to go into an adult body. And if we put up photographs here of all of us when we were babies, would you be able to match it? No, I know. You couldn't match it. So our body's completely changed. But yet we're the same person. Now this is also fascinating instruction. This seems to go against all of our common sense. Prahlad Maharaj said, as long as you don't try to be happy, you'll be happy. And as soon as you try to be happy, you won't be happy. Because our real happiness is already within. Our real happiness is something we already have. It's within us. When we try for external happiness, then we get into all kinds of trouble. Prahlad Maharaj also told them how the super soul, Ishwara Sarvabhutanam, Rajasya Arjuna Tisthati, the super soul, Krishna, is in everyone's heart, and he's our best friend. He is our best friend. He is the most deer. And what a wonderful practical instruction Prahlad Maharaj gives here. If people ask all the time, how do I please Krishna? And here Prahlad Maharaj is saying, just in the favorable way we see ourselves. Because Krishna is the self of the self. We are the Atma, he is the Paramatma. He is the self of the self. So just like we like ourselves, so in the same way, we take care of Krishna. We spend so much time every day taking care of ourselves. The same way we take care of Krishna. Well, now Hiranyakashipu, this was just way too much for him. I mean, that his own son is a servant of his enemy, but now his son is trying to turn all the other followers of Hiranyakashipu against him. Now, of course, he's already tried to kill Prahlad unsuccessfully, so you would think that he would have some sense here. But although he's very intelligent, he doesn't have spiritual intelligence. So he thinks now, instead of trying to kill Prahlad, he's going to kill Prahlad's source. He knows he can't kill Prahlad, but he said, I'm going to try to kill Prahlad's source. He's thinking he's going to try to unplug Prahlad. You understand? I'm going to try to pull the plug. Where are you getting your power? And what does Prahlad say? Same place you're getting your power, God, my dear father, my dear king of the demons. He said everybody gets their power from Krishna. Even the demons get their power from Krishna. And again, Prahlad preaches about friends and enemies. This is the verse we looked at the beginning. Right? Don't say, here's my friend, here's my enemy, my dear foolish father. Your only enemy is your own mind. That's not seeing that the Lord is everywhere. Where is your source of power? Well, he's everywhere, Father. Oh, everywhere. And Hiranyakashipu was so angry. And Krishna talks a lot in the Bhagavad Gita about anger, that in his anger, he thought, I'm going to kill God. And if he's everywhere, if I smash this pillar, then I'll kill God. Does that make any sense? It didn't make any sense. But we were very angry. We do things that don't make a lot of sense. So what happened when Hiranyakashipu first struck the pillar? Anybody know? There was a great sound. There was, yes?
It was like an earthquake.
It was. And there was such a sound, nobody knew where the sound was coming from. Now, by the way, what I just played there, have any of you been to Simachalam in Germany? We have a temple in Germany called Simachalam, and there the only deity we have is Nrisingha Prahlad. And when it's time for greeting the deities, you expect they're going to sing play the Brahma Samhita, you know, Jumana singing the Brahma Skoda. So you expect to hear the da da da, and you hear this. And then Krishna Kshetra is singing prayers to Lord Nrisingha Dev. So after the sound, the pillar broke open. Came out that was half man, half lion, and Hiranyakashipu's thinking, who is that? I've never seen a form like that. He thought, oh, must be Vishnu. Vishnu must have taken this form to kill me, he thought, but who can kill me? Nobody can kill me. He took out his sword and started fighting with the Lord. At the same time, the Lord had arms that looked like soldiers, and with his arms he killed Hiranyakashipu's followers in all directions. Then Hiranyakashipu jumped up to attack Nrisingadev, but Nrisingadev had such an effulgence that Hiranyakashipu became invisible. Now this photograph is a photograph of Lord Nrisingadev in Mayapur, and the devotee who took the picture did not see this in the camera as she was taking the picture. And later on, when she went to look at it in her equipment, she saw that the picture looked like this. This is a not touched up, not special lighting picture of Lord Nrisingadev. So then Nrisingadev captured Hiranyakashipu, just like Garuda will capture a snake. But just like an eagle will capture a snake and then sometimes play with it. So then Nrisingadev also let Hiranyakashipu slip out of his grasp. Now often the Lord does this. He lets the demons and materialistic people think, I'm winning, I'm winning. Right? before he trounces them. And the demigods were watching this. They didn't like this when the Lord let Hiranyakashipu go for a little bit. They thought, oh no, now it's going to be worse. Hey, I thought Hiranyakashipu's harassing us, but when the Singhadeva is finished, then we're really going to be finished. Then the Singhadeva, roaring, he rested Hiranyakashipu, and he was both roaring and laughing. Now Lord Kapiladeva says that we should meditate on the laughter of Lord Vishnu. But Hiranyakashipu was closing his ears, not wanting to hear the laughter of the Lord. Finally, the Singhadeva caught Hiranyakashipu and took him to the doorway in the twilight. And then, very easily, he tore him apart just using his fingernails. And your fingernails are not weapons. Also, they're not alive and they're not dead. And the doorway is not inside or outside. And the twilight is not day or night. Was not a human or an animal. Then he killed all the soldiers of the demons who were left. His breathing made the oceans into tidal waves. His feet pressed down and made huge mountains. Of the demigods could pacify him. Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath. And although the demigods offered their prayers, the Lord was still very angry. Then the demigods pushed Prahlad up to see the Lord. Now, this picture is a little sanitized because really Lord Nrsimhadeva at that time was pretty ghastly. Prabhupada said, if you want to enjoy the ghastly rasa, then you worship the Singhadeva. Right? He had this, like I'm wearing flowers, but he was wearing bloody intestines, and his mane was soaked with blood. I'm sure his hands also were soaked with blood. But he became very peaceful upon seeing Prahlad. Put his hand on Prahlad's head. And it says, Prahlad Maharaj says, oh my Lord, you don't even put your hand on the head of the goddess of fortune, but you are putting your hand on my head. Now it's interesting, Prahlad Maharaj was already pure devotee. He was already completely pure. But when the Lord's hand touched his head, he felt completely cleansed. Because spiritual life is not static, it's dynamic. So even your purity can go on and on and on. In spiritual life, there's no satiation. There's satisfaction, but no satiation. In material life, there is satiation, but no satisfaction. And then Prahlad felt all the symptoms of ecstasy surging through his body. He cried. His heart was bursting with love, and he sat on the Singhadeva's lap. And he said to Nrsimhadeva, this is the deity in Simhachalama singing about a journey. He said, I'm not afraid of your ferocious mouth, your tongue, which is compared to a dueling sword, your eyes as bright as the sun, your frowning eyebrows, your sharp teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, your high wedge-like ears, your roaring, your nails. You know, many times we have difficulty in our life. We think if God loves me, he's only going to give me good things. with a devotee, they see in both the good and the bad things, here is the form of the Lord, and they're not afraid. Like it says, Maharaj Parikhit, when he was cursed by the Brahmin boy, Srini, said he saw that the Lord had taken the form of the curse. And then Prahlad said, I don't want to be liberated alone. I want to bring everybody this ecstasy I'm feeling. He said, I want to share this with everyone. And Lord Nisaya said, but I want to give you a benediction. And it's my pastime to give benedictions. And Prahlad said, well, I didn't worship you to get a benediction. I'm not a merchant. That's not my interest. But if you do want to do something for me, let there be no material desires in my heart. And please don't let my father suffer. Now, it's interesting that Prahlad Maharaj said, my father performed heavily sinful, offensive acts against you, my lord, and against me. So Prahlad wasn't a fool. It wasn't that he thought, oh, my father didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes we think forgiveness means saying, oh, you did nothing wrong. Prahlad Maharaj said, my father did very wrong things, and I want my father to be fixed, but I don't want him to have to suffer. So this is forgiveness. Forgiveness is, may you learn your lesson without suffering. May my enemies learn their lessons through joy. And this is what we mean by not distinguishing between friends and enemies. Because what do we want for our friends? We want our friends to be happy, right? So also want your enemies to be happy. And by the way, if we don't like learning through suffering, guess what? If we want our enemies to learn through joy, we're going to learn more through joy too. One reason we learn through suffering is because we want those who hurt us to learn through suffering. So Lord Nisingadev says, I know you don't want anything. I know you have no desire for material things, but I want you to enjoy the opulences of the demons as their king. So this is, of course, Krishna's humor, perhaps, that it's often the people who don't want anything to whom he gives, because he knows that they'll use it properly. Whereas when people want things for themselves, often they don't get, because they're going to misuse it. So Prahlad was then crowned the king of the demons. Nrisimhadev ki jai! So we should consider, can anyone really hurt or help us without the will of the Lord? And if the Lord is our benefactor, then whatever anyone does to us is ultimately good. Just imagine a whole world where people didn't think in terms of friends and enemies. Where everybody wanted to do good for everyone. So I hope you enjoyed that.
Yes. Yes.
So I think we've gone over time because you're supposed to end at 6:15. So I don't think we have time for questions.
Or do we have time?
We do have time.
Yes.
That's very interesting. Okay.
We have time for another lecture.
We have time for another lecture. Right. Not tonight. Okay. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes?
Yeah, I'm reading Bhagavatam, the story of the shooting, and I'm hearing the different versions that people, you know, that you see throughout our culture. I'm always kind of confused by the entities that Hirani Kashipu set upon Prahlad, whether they could hurt him if they had wanted to, or obviously they couldn't, but if they didn't even try. So did they hold back?
If they could have done what?
So like if the mad elephant, did he hold himself back because of the presence of the Lord, or did he was just unable to, even though he was trying.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question because it's not given in the Shastras. And it could be that there's some commentary of the Acharyas on that. I haven't personally read it, but that'd be an interesting thing if you find out, if you can share it with us. But I'm not sure whether that was the super soul in the elephant's heart that says don't step on him, or, you know, it just didn't work, or what? I don't know. A very good question. Thank you, Russell. Yes?
I have a comment.
Yes.
I really liked a comment you gave about forgiveness. Mm. How it is not just by saying, oh, you didn't do anything, and thinking that we're taking a humble position, that, oh, you didn't do anything, so it's fine, and thinking in our mind that we're being humble and forgiving, versus that is a wrong concept.
Yes.
And rather we should be thinking that may they not suffer for whatever shortcomings are happening.
Yes. Now we want them to be fixed.
Yes. So I really.
But to be fixed joyfully. Because we want to be fixed joyfully, yes? I mean, sometimes I meet people who say, I want to learn through suffering, but anyway, I don't know what to say to that. But would we like to learn joyfully?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Have we all learned through suffering? Has everybody learned something through suffering?
Yes.
Have we learned something through joy? Wouldn't we prefer to learn through joy?
Yes.
So if you want to learn through joy, two things. First of all, when Krishna gives you joy, learn from it. So sometimes we don't learn, and we just don't pay attention. And he tries to teach us gently, you know. I like to say Krishna calls his cows by name, right? He has his japa beads of pearls and jewels. You know that? It's in Krishna book. And he calls his cows by name. How else does he call his cows? With his flute?
With his flute.
And how else does he get them to move? If calling them by name doesn't work, and what else does he have?
Stick.
He has a stick and a rope. So, you know, how would you rather come? With the name, the flute, the stick, the rope?
I take the flute.
He'll take the flute. So, try to listen for the name of the flute, and he won't have to get out his stick. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that Suniti tells Dhruva Maharaj, she said, whatever you wish for others is what you will receive. It's not just what you do for others, but what you wish for others. So if you think, oh, this person has hurt me, or they've hurt someone that I love, or whatever, you know, I hope they suffer from that. Well, guess what? Whenever we think like that, we're putting out there something that's going to boomerang back to us. And that's one of the main reasons that we learn through suffering, that we suffer, frankly. So it should be, you know, if somebody is the cause of my suffering, first of all, you know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe they're not wrong. Sometimes I'm sure somebody offended me, and actually I offended them. That's happened to me a few times. So maybe they're not my enemy, maybe I was their enemy. But anyway, even if it's a fact that they offended me, may they learn through joy. May they not suffer. And that is the essence of forgiveness. The essence of forgiveness is I wish well to everyone. That way you don't get karmic bonds with people. When you don't forgive people, when you want people to suffer, you actually create a karmic bond with them. A question on a piece of paper.
From outside.
Oh, from out of the window. Okay. Sometimes classes are on the internet and people, you know, type in the questions and somebody gives it to you. This is very low tech. out of the window class. When we are approached by someone, this is the question. When we are approached by someone coming to the temple for the first time and they see the bloody picture of the Singhadev, what's the best way to explain to them what's happening? Yeah. Do you have any bloody pictures of the Singhadev in this temple?
Yeah.
Right there.
So there. Well, that's the deity from Mayapur. That's not quite so obvious.
It happens on kids' t-shirts in schools.
The t-shirts in schools. Well, there are a lot of temples that intentionally don't have pictures of Lord Nrisimhadev like that for that reason. But what do you say?
Actually, Mataji, a devotee gave a perfect response to that question.
Oh, let's hear it.
He said, this is how we treat child molesters.
That's really good. Well, there you go. That's your answer. Actually, Harini Kashipu was the first child abuser, right? He wasn't a molester, really. He was an abuser. But Harini Kashipu was like the Adi child abuser. And although there was no CPO or social services, yeah. That's great. Thank you. All right. Is that all right? Oh, window Esther? Okay. Yes.
We see in the Bhagavatam that Prahlad learned all this from Narada Muni Vagnu.
Yes.
He also recites all these teachings.
Yes.
Exactly how we hear. So, was that in Sanskrit language he heard, or does it the language?
Oh, I have no idea.
Because
I don't have a clue.
The language, normally when a child comes out of the womb, we teach the language, the expressions, and all these things. So the Sanskrit, my question is Sanskrit natural for the child to understand the vibrations? You know, it's more...
I really don't know. I mean, like I said, there are people today, they'll speak to the child in whatever language they have, you know, Mandarin, English, Spanish, whatever, and the child can learn in the womb by hearing that language. I mean, I know it says in the Bhagavatam that the fortunate child can remember their past 100 births, and they grieve wretchedly, it says, and they're praying to the Lord, you know, this time I'm not going to mess up. So it does appear that at least at a certain point in the womb, from like 6 lunar months on, that the living entity has some sort of hyper-consciousness. Because it's hard to imagine a newborn baby praying like that. So it seems to be a time when the living entity is particularly receptive. But again, in the modern age, there's all these studies that children in the womb do learn and they do hear. Like if you watch certain TV shows when you're pregnant, the children they'll respond favorably to that music and stuff like that, and they respond favorably to the voices that they've heard in the womb. That specific question is way beyond anything I've ever read or heard. I'd have to wildly guess, and I'm not going to do that. Someone over here? Yes.
Well, I asked my son, like, if he remembered anything, because I was interested to see if he had any memory, and he said he remembered the smells of the food.
Well, there is also, again, evidence that even though the child is eating through their blood, you know, the food is going through the placenta, through the blood, into the navel. It's not going through the mouth. I mean, even in the beginning, the mouth isn't even developed. There is, again, evidence that children will prefer the taste of the food that their mother ate when she was pregnant. There you go. Yes.
How should we pray to Lord Nrsingadev?
Like, you know, it's interesting because when I gave this class yesterday in Potomac, somebody asked me exactly the same question. So we have the prayers to Lord Nrsingadev. Srila Prabhupada said that we should pray the same prayers that the Acharyas have prayed. We can, that doesn't mean we can't say our own prayers, but we can also pray those prayers. So Prahlad has prayers to Lord Nrsingadev in the 7th canto. He also has prayers in the 5th canto. So you can learn any of those prayers. There is a prayer to Lord Nrsingadev also in the 6th canto, Vidiksha Dikshu Dhammadha Samantara Antarabhira Bhagavan Narasimha Parapya Loka Payam Swanena Swateja Sikrasta Samastatena. And then there's the prayer that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Lord Nrsingadev. Any of you know that? Sri Nrsinga. Nrsinga Jai Jai Nrsingadev Prahladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa. That's such a real sweet prayer. That's about how Lord Nrsingadev, he's like a bumblebee at the face of Lakshmi. That's real sweet. So any of those prayers. I don't suggest that you ask Lord Nrsingadev to like smash you. I know people who've done that, but I don't really recommend it. I mean, unless you really enjoy that. Be careful when you pray that to Lord Nrsingadev. It's again, what do you want? You know, you want the name, the flute, or the stick. So when you go to Nrsingadev, you're asking for the stick. So you, if that's your thing. Somebody else? Yes.
Yeah, just to get back on, how do you explain to a visitor about the pictures? I'm thinking of the DC temple, about the pictures of...
Of all the incarnations.
Yes, yes. In Christianity, there's a book in the Bible called Revelations.
Mm.
And in Revelations, you have beings who have bodies of humans and heads of animals.
That's true.
So I would relate that to them, that it's like the revelations in the Bible, and most of them can
relate
that
like
parallel.
That. Well, the most extreme one is in Houston, which I hope they've taken down. I think it's Shishupal's head being cut off. It's pretty like, I don't know, it's one of those that's really, is it Shishupal? Or maybe someone else, maybe.
It's there still.
It's still there?
Yeah,
a number of us have looked at that and said, that's not the right picture to have in the temple. But now it's interesting that you bring that up, but we're it's now 6:33.
It's okay.
Yes, no problem.
No problem.
I mean, some of you are really suffering there with the heat. If we look about the objections that people have to religion and to scripture, you know, and what do people object to? One of their main objections is that there are things in the scripture that are beyond our experience. There are things that are fantastic and unbelievable, like, you know, beings having bodily forms that we don't experience, and beings on other planets. You know, it talks in the Bible, we talk about an eagle that can fly from one planet to another. That's interesting, because Sataputta has evidence that there are astronauts who've seen these huge birds in outer space. But one thing I'm just thinking of, if we say, well, it's also like that in the Bible, but that may be one reason people have turned away from the Bible or turned away from the scriptures, is they say, well, there's all this supernatural stuff in there, and how can we believe it? I mean, I know myself, when I was first reading the Bhagavatam, I certainly could believe everything there, but I found it very hard to relate. You know, I'm reading about these people who have, you know, snakes as children and travel in aerial mansions, and it just didn't seem to have anything to do with my own life. How do I do that? You know, okay, Devahuti's the ideal wife, but I couldn't act like Devahuti. I mean, it just wasn't accessible to me. And then when Prabhupada started translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I read that, I was like, oh, I felt like I was reading about another ISKCON temple. You know, and it was something. I see that Lord Chaitanya has pastimes that we can access more as far as a model, and say, well, there's a template for me I can follow, I can do what these devotees are doing. But, you know, the reality is that not only do the scriptures teach about fantastic, supranormal things, but you know what? So do the modern scientists. So the modern scientists, how do they say, what's they say is the origin of the universe? The Big Bang. So before the Big Bang, there was first what? Well, that's later. But first, what was there first? Nothing. So first there was nothing. There was total nothing. Then from the total nothing, somehow, there came the total something. That was infinitely small and infinitely dense. Have you ever come across anything that was infinitely small and infinitely dense? That appeared in nothing. And then this infinitely small, infinitely dense something that appeared in nothing exploded. And when it exploded, it made suns and moons and galaxies and planets that all perfectly move. Right. So, I mean, if I put something hot in my blender and it explodes, I don't get planets. You know, we had a devotee make a satire on this. New construction company, put all your materials on your lawn where you want to build, and get some dynamite, and you'll have a house. You know, so they're saying there was this explosion, and then, you know, there was some electrical storm, and goop all of a sudden became alive. You know, just started becoming alive and reproducing. And as it reproduced, it turned into giraffes and oak trees and gorillas and whales. And now, is that very believable? Do we ever experience this? Has anyone ever experienced this? Nobody ever. It's completely unbelievable. And I don't see how that's any less or more believable then there's this huge Mahavishnu with four arms who has a lotus coming out of his navel, and there's a four-headed Brahma sitting at the top. I don't see that one is more or less believable than the other. In fact, the concept that it's a person who's intelligent seems to me to be more believable than any, there's just sort of these random acts of matter. So I think we also want to address that. When we're looking at the supernatural, if we just say all the scriptures in the world have something supernatural, which they do, to say, well, you know, as soon as anyone gets to the origin of everything, the origin of the universe, ultimate questions, we're at supernatural. Nobody goes to ultimate questions without going to supernatural, without going to something inconceivable. There's nobody who's been able to give just some everyday explanation for why everything exists. Okay, so what do we have now? We have some announcements, and then prasadam?
Yes, ma'am.
So thank you very much for inviting me here. May you get your big temple. And may it be as full as this. All right.
Thank you so much, Mataji.